So I want to talk to you about the number 15. 15 is the key number, which most people do not realize, which we're going to deal with on Pesach. But anyone to tell me, this is a difficult question, any famous 15s in Jewish thought that you know? Any famous 15s? Tubav. Okay. Tubishvah. So we see the 15th day of certain months have things going on them. That's true. That's very fair. Right. Yes. Yeah. Anything else? Yeah. It's correct. Did have to happen on the 15th, yes. It must be related to what we're saying somehow. It must be. So the Gemara tells us that we know there are 15 psalms out of King David's psalms that talk of Shir HaMa'alot, that start with Shir HaMa'alot. 15 out of how many psalms are there by King David? 150. Tehillim. 15 out of the 150 were called Shir HaMa'alot. Songs of ascension, they're called. The songs of going up. Yes. Yes. Very, very good, Devorah. And there were 15 steps that went into the Beit HaMikdash. And the 15 Kohanim, or more, or Levim, would stand on those 15 steps. And they would sing these 15 songs as the people would go up those steps into the Beit HaMikdash. 15 Levim, I believe, will stand on those 15, 1-5. We're only on 1-5. Yeah, 1-5. Yeah, still 1-5. We're going to get to 50 when we talk about Shavuot. That's going to be 50. Now we're doing 15. What is the, I won't say the numerical value, because the numerical value is 15, but what letters usually represent 15? Yud with a hey. What does Yud with a hey usually refer to? Hashem, right? It's the first two letters of Hashem's four-letter name. Yud with a hey, with a vav, with a hey. Right? The name that is so holy, we don't even pronounce it. So it's half of Hashem's name. He's like on the way, but it's not totally there. Let us paste all those together, because we are going to have 15 steps of the Pesach Seder. By the way, I'm sure there's more 15s. I don't know them. You can look them up. But probably, somehow, it must relate to what we're discussing over here. 15 steps, the Seder. Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpatz, Yachatz, Magidrach, Sambo, Tima, Sambo, Rompere, Shachanarech, Safarech, Anel, Nirtza, 15. We're going to go through those 15 and see how we do them. But just the amount of them is interesting in that it's almost as if they're steps to go somewhere. They aren't so much the destination themselves, but they are the, as we say in Gemara language, the Hechatim. So they are what take us to the next place we're going to. Okay, now we've already discussed what we're going to on Pesach. We are going, where are we going? We're getting out of Egypt. We're going free. We're going free. And eventually to Har Sinai, as we said, and eventually to Eretz Yisrael, right? Which was meant to happen 3 weeks later. I remember this point, when they left Mitzrayim, it was going to happen a few weeks after Har Sinai. Okay, that was the original plan. Okay, so we see there's going to be 15 steps, and these 15 steps are going to have 15 symbols that go with them. We're going to go through these 15 steps, what's involved in them, how they're done, and the halachot that are. But let's just run through them at least so we know exactly what they are. Step one, Kadesh. Kadesh. What does Kadesh mean? To sanctify, that's really Kiddush. That's the first of the four cups of wine, and that's Kiddush, right? To bring in any holiday, you need to have Kiddush to welcome in the holiday. Now, unlike every Jewish holiday we have, yes, we say Kiddush. So Purim and Hanukkah aren't, I mean, we call them holidays, but they aren't Torah-mandated holidays that we don't do malacha, yeah? Truth be told, we make Kiddush to welcome in the day, and over there we see the Megillah, but the Kiddush is there for Torah-mandated holidays, of which Pesach is one of them. Yeah? And that's the first of the four cups. Therefore, since we're going to see, you need to, Shabbat, you can bring in early. Pesach, you cannot. right, has to be on the 15th night, okay? So therefore, 15th by night, therefore that first Kiddush must be made after, no, sunset's not good enough. It's after nightfall. That's the ideal, optimal way. We're going to do it after nightfall, after Tzet HaKochavim, after the stars come out, right? We know sunset is when the sun goes behind the horizon, but then we are Ben HaShemashot, we're in time of doubt, we don't know if that's day or night. Hashem does, but we don't, and therefore we wait for Tzet HaKochavim, and that's really going with the first cup of the four cups of wine, okay? We're going to see, I don't think we did already actually, oh dear, 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 oh dear, 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 dear. We are going to, yes, we are going to see why we have four cups of wine. Okay, they are going to be, yeah, whew, thank goodness for that. That's come up. Not this class, but another class. Four cups of wine we're going to see are going to be for the four expressions mentioned in the Torah talking about the redemption of the Jewish people from Egypt. Okay, the four expressions that are used, we're going to learn them, we're going to memorize them, and we're going to have them. Okay, that's number one. That's part one. Part two, orchatz, from the Hebrew word rechitza. This is washing our hands. Now, why do we wash our hands at this point? Not motzi. Not motzi. We're not going to make our motzi yet. We're not going to make our motzi yet. We're about to eat something. What are we about to eat? The karpas. What is karpas? Right, so it's a small root vegetable. I say small deliberately. Should be a small amount of food. And karpas. Actually, anyone Persian here? Any Persians in the class? Must be one Persian. Yeah, but it was the Persian New Year recently. Nothing to do with this particular New Year, any way, shape, or form. I mention it because the word karpas, is not, are you Persian here? No, you're not Persian?
Oh,
what are you? Are you? You're Moroccan?
Yeah.
Moroccans are more Ashkenaz than they are Sephardic, actually. You have rice on Pesach?
No.
You do? Why? What are you? Oh. Oh, really? Going back Italian? Oh. That's interesting. So that's Sephardic. But not all Italians were Sephardic, Ashkenazi.
It's a separate sect.
It is actually a separate sect. Do you know where? Just 1 second, this is interesting to me. I'm so sorry, Victor. I'm not ignoring you in any way, shape, or form. Where in Italy?
It was in Florence.
In Florence, in Firenze? Yeah. And this was Jewish family? Really? And when did they leave?
Israel or Florence?
When did you leave Florence? And they'd been there for how many years?
In Israel?
In Florence.
Oh, okay. I'm about 900.
900 years?
Yeah.
Wow. That's very interesting. I want to hear more about this another time. Yes?
You know, someone person just taught me that the word for karpas is like the same for celery.
Very, very good. That's very good. That's exactly what I'm trying to say. I like to tell purchase this. Karpas from karafs. Karafs is actually celery. That's absolutely correct. Some people have celery. If there's any root vegetable, actually, is sufficient for this. Really, it comes, it's related to the word karpas. Anyone know what was called karpas in the Torah? Yosef had a beautiful coat. How does Yosef enter the deal over here? What is Yosef entering? Why is some kind of reference to the coat of Yosef? What happened to this coat of Yosef, by the way? The brothers took it off him. Remember, it's between the blood. Showed it to Yaakov the father. Right? Remember this story? Yeah. Hello, yes?
He was the reason why they came to Egypt.
Ah, very good. That's the reason he went to Egypt, right? He was sold into Egypt because that's a ticker and had to go back as well. So that's part of the historical reality. Remember the fact that we went into Egypt itself. Why are we washing our hands over eating a vegetable? Why are we washing our hands over eating a vegetable? Do you ever wash your hands before you eat vegetables?
No. Didn't that used to be a thing?
Says Emma Rubenstein. Did that used to be a thing? Yes, Emma Rubenstein did used to be a thing, as you said.
It used to be
that some say even today, but generally some people don't. As careful, when you eat vegetables, right, and it's covered in one of the seven liquids that move tumah impurity, for example, water is one of them, you have to wash your hands. If you eat vegetables, or you should dry your vegetables. Generally speaking, we don't do that, definitely not with a blessing nowadays. As a remembrance of that, we wash our hands. Some say, actually, the reason we wash our hands at this point is because it's so unusual to do it that way. We do these things to pique interest in our children, which we already spoke about last class. The idea of keeping children interested, we do things unusually. Man shtan ha laila ze mikol ha leilot, right? We dip differently. So we wash our hands as though washing for bread, which used to be the way if you eat wet vegetables, right? Since the tumah can go into the vegetables, the impurity in that, we do the same thing. We used to wash our hands. We don't make a blessing, but washing our hands actually was done even on wet vegetables, right? Even in those days. So we do it, some say, just in order to keep the interest. Because, like, why? We never wash hands of vegetables. Ah, let me tell you all about Jewish history.
When did they do that?
Time of the Gemara. When the temple was still standing. Okay? That's Orchatz, and Orchatz, therefore, is a washing. You wash the same way. Now, some people will... I just want to mention this as a side point. Some people will do this as like a ceremony. This should be a normal, regular washing. Just like you wash your hands for bread nowadays, which is also a remembrance of the Beit HaMikdash as well, with a normal cup with a flat. You can't use a pitcher, just by the way. I've seen people bring out pitchers for this. Pitcher meaning a spout that comes off the top. This is not okay for washing one's hands. You need koach gavri. You need to have a flat top to the vessel that you are using. By the way, that's also true for washing for bread as well. That's also true for washing with bread as well. A flat top, right? And the minimum amount, and there is a revius. So those people who wash their fingernails is not good enough for mime Rishonim. It may be good for mime Acharonim, but not good for the original.
What do you need? You need like your whole hand?
You need to have, yes, up to your wrist, your entire hand, front and back, is how you wash your hands. Before or after?
Before.
Yeah, you should actually not have anything, like water, any interference on your hand. It should be dry, yes. Yes, and that's how you wash your hands. Okay? Interestingly, Sephardim Ashkenazim, really once is enough. Ashkenazim do it two on each hand, Sephardim do
three.
Do three as well? Okay, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, Baruch Hashem. Yeah, we do three on each hand. By the way, the Gemara says that it's Shefa Bracha. The more water you use, the more financial blessing you get. So that's why Sephardim like to do three, and I personally like to use a bucket.
Wait, other people do three also, though.
There's no problem. You're not making a...
No, but it's like... Isn't it a
You can do once enough. Two is it is a customary. Chabad, maybe they do three as well, yeah. I think they do. One? No one does one. No one does one. Usually Ashkenazim two and Sephardim three. You've seen three, you do three as well, you're Chabad?
No, I'm not Chabad, but I think I'm Baal Shuva, and the person who taught me how to wash my hands
was Chabad, so you follow Chabad Minhag, right, Dave. That's what happens, Baal Shuva. It's fine, you're not... There's no problem, you can do that. It's no extra... It's not Baal Tosef or anything. I'm looking in general, including Orchatz.
I never heard of three.
Yeah. Now you're going to see a Sephardi, and you're going to wash a Sephardi, wash the hands, pour bread, and they do three. One, two, three. And all up to the wrist, by the way. And by the way, I see my kids do it like this, but you're not Chabad, yeah?
No.
You're going to be. You mean Chabadnik? Wow. Yes.
I just want to say the Chabad is that you should have the water touch all of your hands.
Yes.
You hold your hand like that.
You should. That's exactly. You should do it that way. By the way, it's not Chabad. My daughters, they teach me, they come back, they hold their hand like this, like a fist, an open fist with each part of it, and it was like, when they learn in school, they wash their hands, you see them washing like this, right? So it touches the front and the back up to the wrist, up to the peric. That's how you should wash your hands. It shouldn't just be the back or the front, it should be both. That's how to wash your hands totally. I haven't seen either. If you say so, it's done. But they do it three times each? So you're gonna be a Chabadnik?
Yeah, I'm agreeing.
That's interesting. Do you have to change that minhag? That's an interesting thing.
No. Why?
Why shouldn't she? She wants to make money. She wants to bring Parnassa to her home. What should change if you want?
Oh, no. I thought you were saying...
If you marry Chabad, if you marry someone, you take on their minhag.
No. I thought you were saying that when she's Chabad, she needs to change the minhag. She needs to make sure Chabad people don't do that.
No,
I thought you were saying
no.
I was really confused.
No. Just one's husband. One takes on the overt customs of one's husband is generally how it's taken. You don't get to get brox. Oh my goodness.
Even for little things like washing your hands.
You have to ask your local Orthodox rabbi about that. You see people. You see people do that. Yeah. For public things,
right?
I don't know if this is such a major thing because the halacha itself is. There's a minhag, but yeah, minhagim we do. Listen, you marry Sephardi, you can start eating rice on Pesach. Bezrat Hashem. Okay, let's keep going.
Okay.
Next is yachatz. Yachatz, you break the middle of the three matzot into the plate, into two pieces. Okay? And really, matzah has within it pretty much the story is all about. It represents the bondage, right? The slaves, because slaves eat matzah, right? They eat food that doesn't get a chance to rise. They're quickly, they're eating, it's cheap, easy to make, and doesn't need, times 11. So you're a busy servant, you're a slave. But eventually, by the end of the Seder, it's going to represent the redemption, right? Because we were excited to go out. So matzah is the symbol by which the entire Seder pretty much revolves around.
And when we say Alachmania?
Yes. This is the bread of affliction. That's right. That's the beginning. Right. Okay? I wish we'd go through the entire Haggadah. In this course, I don't have time to do it. We have too much to do. But in preparation for Pesach Seder, you can actually go through the Haggadah before. People think the Haggadah is just there for the night itself. You can go through the Haggadah with some commentaries, you know, before to prepare yourself for the event itself. Now you have more. When I grew up, it was like one Haggadah. You know what I'm saying? Everyone had one Haggadah, which had terrifying pictures inside it, you know? Now it's like Haggadah City. Every single rabbi brings out their own personal Haggadah, you know? Except me. Yeah. Good. If that's what you're into, read her. Fantastic. Brilliant individual. She had some great insights. So it starts with the tale of why we were broken, right? Because we were broken as people. Okay, that was the broken spirit, pretty much, of our people. Okay? And there's also Kabbalah and Minhagim that connect to this. Some people shape it into a Vav and a Hey or a Dalet, different customs and things we do. Eventually, the larger part that you cut out is left for the Afikomen. What does what Afikomen mean? Anybody know? Is that Hebrew? Hebrew? Heard about it? No. Afikomen actually is related to the Greek word epikumen, which means dessert. Dessert on Pesach is matzah. And we're going to see that it's going to relate. Yeah, that is your dessert. That is the last taste besides the final two cups of wine and water, if you want, I think tea, that you have on your mouth, right? Originally, wasn't that? It was Korban Pesach. We don't have that anymore, so the Afikomen takes its place, and that's what we eat as well. We're going to see more about that a little bit later.
So but Afikomen. That Afikomen is based off a Greek.
The word itself. The word itself. We'll kind of get to a little bit later. Yes, the last thing you eat. That's the word itself. That you can have dessert, but after dessert, you have to. If you, by the way, if you have room in your stomach for dessert after all that matzah, I am very impressed with your eating abilities. That's very, very impressive. What?
Macarons are fantastic. So good.
Okay, I'm happy to have a discussion about Pesach desserts, macaroons. Meringue. I don't know. I grew up, there was nothing. Now they have everything.
My mom has this strawberry cake recipe. It's so good.
Whatever you have for dessert, the Afikomen comes after it. Okay? And if you can fit it in, Hare Zeh Meshubach. But you should still eat the Afikomen with some appetite, because it is a mitzvah, and it shouldn't be like, oh, I can't. Right? It's got to be, there's got to be like a little bit of, seriously, it's got to be some appetite. It's a mitzvah. Right, it's a very big mitzvah of the night itself. You should still have appetite by the time you get to the. I always say that one night a year you eat for Hashem totally. You know, I don't. You have a little bit of food, a little bit of, whatever you eat for the meal itself, and the rest is all matzah cramming.
When are you supposed to have what time?
We're going to come to that. Before chatzos is going to be the optimal time for the afikomen. Right, that's the optimal time. We're going to come to that as well. Okay. So there's a very strong. I mean, it sounds like we spoke of this on Purim, messianic lesson that comes with Pesach, which is why Eliyahu Hanavi is going to come at the end. We're going to talk about the fifth cup of wine, right, which is the cup of Elijah, Eliyahu Hanavi, who's going to announce Mashiach. So there's a strong messianic, really the latter part of the Seder is all about Mashiach and Yemos Olam Haba of future days. Just pour it. We'll see. Pour it, but don't drink it. We're going to see later on. We're going to do a whole class just on the four and the fifth cup. It's a machlokat, actually, with our four or five. We do five, we don't drink it or make a bracha on it. And it's called and it's called the cup of Eliyahu Navi. So there's a strong future world. So it's if to say the larger portion of matzah, as in the larger portion of our activities in this world, are saved for Olam Haba. So the larger piece of the matzah, of the yachatz matzah, takes us to Olam Haba. Okay, so already investing at the beginning of the Seder for the end of the Seder, from the beginning to the end. Remember, the word Seder comes from the same root as Sidur, means the order. This is the order we follow, and the order is very precise and very exact. Just like in your tefillot, you can't say Mincha before Shacharit, you can't say Mara before Mincha, you can't say the Amida before Baruch Sheamar. There is an order. So too, this order is very, very specific and deliberate. Okay? So too, we put away at the beginning of the Seder a larger portion for the end, i.e. Olam Haba, because the end of the Seder is all about Olam Haba. Make sense? Minky, we good today? Abs fabs. Okay. Then we come to what we're going to see, the Torah mitzvah. There are going to be seven mitzvot, which we're going to go through together, that we're going to do at the Pesach Seder. Five of them are Darabonin, two of them are Daraisa. One of the Doraises, one of the Torah obligations, is to read the Haggadah. We already saw that Pasuk in the last class, V'higadata L'vincha. Remember, Marjorie? Remember that one? V'higadata L'vincha. Tell your children, right? That's the Haggadah. That is a Torah obligation. Those people who run through the Haggadah as a speed reading contest, right, find the relative who knows Hebrew the best and off you go, is not the way to do it. Okay? It is not a speed reading contest. It is meant to be a conversation. It is meant to elicit questions back and forth. It is not meant to be like, oh dear, let's just get through the Maxwell Haggadah so we can eat our chicken soup. Right? You stop. You discuss. You talk about stuff. What's happening over here? Why does it say that? Okay. You don't have to be till 4 or 5 in the morning. And when I was a kid, it was like we used to have argue, you know, who stayed at the latest? I don't think this is the competition in our day and age. It should be engaging, but it doesn't have to be all night in our day and age. You still get a good night's sleep. However, it should be interesting. Okay, so really the Maggid is the main part of the Seder. And we go into the Haggadah. And the Haggadah, for the word Lahagid, to tell over, is going to be a recalling of Jewish history from the time of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov all the way till Mitzrayim, the Exodus of Mitzrayim, and references to Har Sinai as well. All these things will be mentioned backwards and forwards, and by following through, we fulfill that mitzvah of Haggadah, reading the Haggadah. Okay? Okay. After that, we get to the next washing. The first washing, we do not say a bracha, because we don't do that anymore. But for this washing, we do. And this washing is the washing for... this washing for... Hamotzi. Right, so once again, sitting at your table and having someone bring you a pitcher with a bowl is not sufficient. You have to wash your hands two times, or, as per your custom, three times on each hand. Yes, Bella Quinzel.
Is there a difference between the chatzar and the chas? The way that it says it differently, does it...
Very good. I don't know the answer to your question. I'm sure there is some reason why the wording is different. The washing is the same, just one is without a bracha.
Right.
So I'm assuming it may be related to that.
Okay.
Good. Well spotted. Well spotted. Okay. Okay, so we make a bracha normally alati jadayim, and then we make hamotzi on how many matzot? Well, the mem. Bare minimum, obviously, is two, right? Because two is how we have Lechem Mishnah. just like any su'da of Shabbat or of a chag, you need to have two loaves of bread. So too, we're going to have two matzot as well. We are also going to include the third half matzah that we cut out, and then we eat. Now, we eat in a rabbinic fashion. Hello, Chava Bam. How are you? Yes.
I was taking the turn.
I judged you favorably, Chava. I knew something was up. I judged you favorably. Okay, we lean. Haseba. Haseba is to lean. Why do we lean? And how do we lean?
On a pillow.
It's very, very good. You know, I always think about this. Non-Jews who work in those hotels. They see everyone coming down like, this meal's going so long. Like, oh, it's finished. And they all come down with their pillows. Like, oh my God, it's still going, right? It's like the never-ending event. Okay, you can use a pillow if you want. You should use something, however, to lean comfortably. And we lean very simply because... Nope, it's not easy to eat leaning. Why do we lean? Because we're free. We're free. And free people will lean, okay? As slaves in Egypt, when you're eating, you ever see a slave sitting back leaning? Oh, he's running around putting the food in his mouth, is off to the next job. Has no time for it. We are free people. We reach the level of royalty, someone mentioned. Okay, that is the level that we reach, and therefore we lean. Shimrit, which way do we lean?
Minky said left.
Minky said left. Right. Minky's right. What was it, left or right? You've got to pick one.
Left.
You sure? Why do we lean to the left and not to the right, Minky? What? So you shouldn't choke. Absolutely. Right? A little flap over your windpipe that when you lean to the right, it whoop opens up. We don't get any food down there, therefore we lean to the left. Okay, are you still trying to feel your throat over there?
No,
I don't even have to feel it, but trust me.
I'm trying to understand.
There's like a little flap over here to the right. Say it's medically safer to lean to the left. That's how we define it. So in other words, for the leaning aspect.
For everyday life, like if I'm leaning to the right.
Yes. Well, that's why actually, halacha, you shouldn't speak while you're eating, because the person could show chas. That's actually the halacha as well. We Jews, however, are not very good at that. We actually do a lot of speaking, but we shouldn't be doing that. Okay. Okay. Therefore, we lean to indicate freedom, to indicate royalty, and the splendor of the night. By the way, I want to mention something else. The Shulchan Aruch mentions, I think I'm going to mention it elsewhere, I'll mention it now, however, you should use your greatest and most beautiful utensils for the Pesach Seder.
Better than Shabbat.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Actually, there used to be people, I know it sounds unusual, but people used to take plates as collateral and deposits for various business deals, even from non-Jews. I know it sounds unusual, but plates used to be expensive. Like now, you go to IKEA, buy another set for like $15, you know what I'm saying? But that's not the way it used to be. It used to be that bedding and plates were very, very expensive. So they tell stories of Jews that would take plates as collateral for various business dealings they were doing. Yeah? What's fascinating about that is that they used to take these plates and put them out on show. They couldn't actually use them because they were treif. But they would put them out to beautify the Pesach Seder. To have them out. So everything looks beautiful and looks good. Just have them out. That's not on your table. Just have them on the side, like on show. They would put out these plates. They were just like ornaments, I guess. Use them as ornaments and just have them out so people could see them. Maybe. Maybe. And they would do that. Just to beautify and to use as something very, very, you know. Maybe they were news by non-Jews. Yeah. Can you make a plate kosher? We're going to talk about kashering a little bit later. We do not kasher ceramic or china. Various reasons why not. Some say because they're not kasherable, and some say because they are, but we don't know exactly how to do it. Maybe there's ways to do it. It hasn't been used for a long time. In an oven, it could break, get over. But generally speaking, we don't. What we do kasher is metal, because metal is kasherable. We're able to expunge the non-kosher food inside it, and knives and forks, and glass. Glass is so dense that it does not absorb much or enough, and therefore glass can be used as well as metal. Metal is what you're kashering on Pesach. Kashering doesn't mean like it's kosher, it means take out the non-kosher blios, pieces that are embedded inside the walls of the pot, or the knife, or the fork. Which is why your grandmothers used to go onto the roof of the buildings, wherever it was, back in Israel, or Russia, or Poland, wherever they were, and used to throw their knives and forks into a pot, not into the dirt. Dirt would not do it. That's nitsa. That I don't believe that would be sufficient over here. It would have to be into a boiling pot of water, which usually had a hot brick inside, which bubbled the water over. That's how to kasher. That's to take out the non-kosher. And you can take any pot. That is absolutely sufficient. That's how they used to do it. They didn't have two knives.
My grandmother still doesn't like that.
Great mother, your great-grandmother's still alive?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
God bless her. She should have a richat yamim. She still kashers that way. That's the way it was. That's the way it was. People didn't have two sets of knives and forks. People were very, very poor. They used to go upstairs, take the knives and forks, chuck it inside, and boil it up and take it out again.
For every time they used it?
No, for Pesach.
Oh.
To get into Pesach, because it has chametz in it, embedded in it, possibly. Okay. And if they became non-kosher, same thing. What? That's how you do it today. You have a knife or a fork, it's non-kosher.
Wait, brand new china? Brand new.
Yeah.
Can't be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if you buy new, obviously. I'm saying it can't be koshered. If you have china that you use with chametz all year,
you
cannot use with...
China.
No, China's okay. China is okay. All right.
What about people who use like plastic stuff if they have a lot of guests? Do they just have to buy nicer plastic stuff?
I've never heard of a distinction, to be honest with you. I've thought about it, of a nice plastic as opposed to not nice. Generally speaking, for Pesach night, for Seder night, one should try to use their finest stir china, if they're able to,
like,
buy some kind of china.
Like, a lot of guests.
You have a lot of guests, you have no choice. You have no choice. If you have loads of people, right, if you're the Chabad of Thailand, which is where you're going to spend your Pesach in a couple of years, then serving like 600 backpacking Israelis, right? Big mess for that, by the way. Wow. There. Just see Devorah, right? Some like Chabad magazine serving these Israelis the charoset. Okay. Beautiful, beautiful. It's a wonderful thing to follow. I guess. That's okay. You have no choice, have a choice. If you're better than mitzvah of bringing Jews to your table who haven't experienced Pesach before, or to have a real, authentic Pesach experience, then use china. That's me speaking. Others may say differently, but I believe that to be true. Dayenu. Elu. Okay, yes. That's a very good and tricky question. There is a problem of having non-Jews at your table on any Jewish holiday. That's something else. Yeah, that's probably leniencies for that, I guess, because they have to experience it somehow. It's a problem when it comes to the food preparation. You see, food... There's a hetzer to cook and prepare food on Yom Tov, right? Because of Ochel Nefesh. Torah says you have an Ochel Nefesh holiday, which you cannot do on Shabbat or Yom Kippur, which are called Shabbat Shabbaton. There you can't. But Jewish holidays, one can. However, it can only be for Jews, right? The Ochel Nefesh does not apply to a non-Jew. It is a little bit tricky. You have to ask your L-O-R in terms of that. Your local Orthodox rabbi, yeah. It's tricky. Just in terms of the food preparation aspect of it. Shabbat, however, that's not a problem. Sorry, Deborah. You use wine. No, use a mevushal wine. Use wine, mevushal wine. So then you just keep it away from them, that's all.
They just don't touch.
Because you're not cooking anyway. There's no food preparation on Shabbat itself, is there? You're not cooking food on Shabbat.
So if I heard somewhere in the...
You can have food, non-Jews come to your house for Shabbos.
Okay, so it's false.
It's false, yeah.
Cleaning ladies
are not allowed to cook Pesach. Cleaning ladies are not
allowed to... What, say that again?
Prepare the food for you.
Prepare food for
you on...
Pesach.
Why not?
Because she's not Jewish.
That's you preparing for her,
no,
for a non-Jinn. That's the other way around.
That's fine.
I think so. I don't see why not.
You're
yeah.
not allowed to prepare for a non-Jinn.
Well, you go to those hotels, there's lots of non-Jinns working in the kitchen, cooking stuff for you. That's not a problem.
No.
Problem is you cooking for them at the say at the holiday su'uda. At the holiday su'uda. Because the food preparation is only allowed for a Jew. But if a non-Jew wants to cook for you and they're in the kitchen, we're going to go, that's fine. Yeah. Right, so you have like, what, have you have your few maids working for you? Yeah, I have to review these halachot. I'm not sure. I believe any extra one is a problem. I believe. Let me look into that. I mean, I've not... Generally speaking, you know, no, it's nothing to do with it. Even every extra person you're having over there may be included in that. I don't know. Let me look into this. I want to research into this. If this is a question of interest, I want to look into it. I want to look into that as well. Somehow there must be a leniency because they do come. So I want to look into that.
How do you even know if someone like let's say it's not up to you, like it's like whatever your family's like inviting people.
Okay, so that's another question of your family doing stuff as opposed to you.
And then there's people who think they're Jewish.
Very, very
like
common.
You go around and ask everyone if their mom's Jewish.
Okay. So that becomes very tricky in our day and age. Generally speaking, when it comes to your family, they do what they do. You know what I'm saying? If people... And you get what it is, all right? I mean, there's families I know who parents eat chametz, all right? And it's chametz in the house, right? Can you be in the house? Yeah, it's their chametz. It's not yours. You have to be very careful that you don't eat any of it, but they have it, they own it. Or a person has a non-Jewish father, right? It's his chametz. It's not yours. You cannot eat it, get any benefit from it, right? And he's not willing to put it away. That's his house. You're residing in someone else's house, so that's what you're stuck with. That situation. You know? You'll be careful to marry someone Jewish, and then you won't have that situation for your kids. But that situation Hashem has put you in, and that's the way it is. Right? You just stay away from it. It's their chametz, it's not yours. Right? A person cannot own chametz. If a non-Jewish work comes to you or a piece of work with chametz on, it is what it is. Okay? These are good questions. I want to come back to this one, this non-Jew at the table. Let me do some bit. I want to poke around a bit more on this one and get back to you on this one because this is a little bit common, right? When non-Jewish uncles turn up for a Pesach Seder and the like. I want to look into this. Okay. Next is Maror. Maror is a rabbinic mitzvah we're going to see. We're going to review the mitzvah specifically, but it's a rabbinic mitzvah.
Yeah, which one is
Magid and Matzah. Are the two doraisas we have covered so far.
Do we need to know which one is
which? Yes, you do need to know which one is which. We're going to review them again later.
In a list.
Okay? Maror are bitter herbs that we have. Chess, merrily, romaine lettuce or horseradish. Okay, well, depends how you have it. So the lettuce, first of all, why does lettuce suffice? It's not very bitter. So they say the more you bite into it, the more you chew it, it does eventually become a little bit bitter. And for this reason, just like the avdut, actually Mitzrayim, started off not so bad and got worse. So to lettuce follows the same pattern. You start biting into it, okay? And then the more you chew it, it does come a little bit bitter. It gives off some bitter taste that is sufficient. Some, like my father-in-law, are totally against this. His tradition is to go Erev Pesach with a pair of swimming goggles into the garage and grind down horseradish from the root.
Yeah.
Hari zeh meshubach. No, horseradish is not. Harasset we're going to come to. That harasset is going to be a mixture of apples and nuts and white wine. That's going to be added in a little bit later. And that is to represent the... Okay. To say it's so good, I don't know, is a slight problem, yes.
It's okay.
Come to the mud, the pitch, the tar that they used to build the bricks, they used to as a remembrance to that. But all the ingredients found inside haroset, interesting enough, right, do have symbolism. The wine and the apples. Apples do play. Anyone know the role that apples... let me be a little clearer. Orchards, apple orchards played in the Pesach story. And aware of that? Oh, really? I thought it might. Okay. Nope.
Is it where the babies were?
That is correct, Minky. Right? Because the men would be extremely tired after they worked, and the Jewish women were very keen to keep the Jewish people going, so they would go out into the orchards under the apple tree, right? And there they would conceive. And the fact that they had the mitzvah, the Jewish women, by the way, we're going to see the Jewish women have a very special role to play, as always, but especially in the Pesach story, because for the schut of the Jewish women, Nigalan, they were redeemed. Which is, by the way, one reason which women are, one reason, are included in all these mitzvot. The same obligation as men, although this is a mitzvah, shezman, grama, it's a mitzvah that is a time-bound mitzvah. Even so, all these mitzvot of Pesach, they're all time-bound, right? You only have matzah one time of year, or, according to some opinions, at night time, right? Even so, women are obligated because they were also involved in this mitzvah. They were also redeemed. In their schut, we were redeemed. And they were part of the redemption. Therefore, they have to celebrate it like anyone else. So in other words, there is a concept of time by mitzvot, but there are exceptions. Purim was an exception because they were also redeemed, and Esther. And here they're an exception because they're merely redeemed. And they were redeemed as well with us. Okay? So part of that schut came from the apple orchards, which was the symbol of the continuation of the Jewish people. That's one connection of the Pesach Seder and apple trees. There is an interesting custom among some people to have apples at a certain simcha. Does anyone know? I think this is mostly Sephardim that do this. Russia now we have apple, that's true, that's everyone. Right, we dip the apple in the honey. That is also true. What else? Had a Brit Milah. Many. You said it.
Yeah.
Very good. I didn't hear. Very good. I didn't hear. I'm sorry. When you get to my age, you'll understand. Very good. You said it. Very good. Had a Brit Milah. They have apples. Many people have apples at Brit Milah. I believe it's related to this reality as well. I believe so. Okay. So we have the maror, whether from lettuce or the horseradish, and there is a. Aspect over there. Next we have the korech, which is the sandwich of matzah. By the way, as a side point, just the matzah we have today are thin, crispy matzot. Now, this historically is not so accurate. I believe the reason we have thin, crispy matzot is because of the shelf life. They last a long time, and people are preparing their matzot before. However, the original matzot probably were not thin, crispy matzot. They were more soft and doughy. And I believe, if I remember correctly, the Gemara says that a matzah can actually be a tefach thick. It can be like a thicker thing. And you see Sephardim nowadays. Many people Sephardim try to recapture their heritage, which is a trend, you know. If you want to go back to the heritage. And they actually have soft matzot. Truth be told, it's got no yeast, it doesn't rise, it has no flavorings, it's lechem oni, which means it cannot have any salt in it at all. So it doesn't really taste like a pita. No, you cannot put any salt in your matzah production. Just flour and water. No, so it has to be lechem oni. Lechem oni is poor man's bread. Poor men don't have time to start spraying salt. Salt used to be a very, very expensive commodity.
But you can eat whatever you want.
Yes, you can. And we're going to dip the matzah into salt. The actual bread itself, actual matzah itself, we do not, nothing else agree. So actually, I'm saying it's not particularly, quote unquote, a tasty treat. I mean, we like the taste, but it has to be a very plain thing. So even the doughy, I had, for the past few years, I had this matzah, doughy one. You have to keep it frozen, then warm it up in 1 second. It gets very, very hard. It has no preservatives in it at all. Right? Stuff we eat has preservatives and sugar and salt and poppy seeds and who knows what else they stuff in there.
Wait, you're allowed to put...
I'm saying not to the matzah. Matzah is lechem oni. Okay? Very, very good. Okay, so there's a lot of symbolism with the korech. Then we have the shulchan orech, which is the meal. And the meal is an important meal. Okay? I will point out to you that we should not be eating meat that is grilled on Pesach. That is the custom. We should not be eating, unless you add like a lot of sauce. Does anyone know why we are careful when it comes to eating meat? Because the Korban Pesach, right, was a roasted meat. and we cannot bring a Korban Pesach anymore, which is why we don't even point at the Korban Pesach, right, and say, right, so we're going to point at the matzah, we're going to point at the maror, we don't point at it, say this is it, this is just a symbol of it, because we cannot bring Korban Pesach now, we are impure, we don't have the tahara that we need, we don't have the paraduma, we cannot eat it, and therefore we don't have these meats. So some people will not have meat. Maybe you add like a rotev or something else to it at all. Some people are very, very, very careful when it comes to this.
But
yes. It's a remembrance, but we don't point
but
at
not,
it. We don't point. It's on the Seder plate. We're going to see.
Right.
We're gonna make a Seder plate
but
together.
Has nothing to do with the
not literally, just you know. What?
Wait,
what? It's a remembrance of it, but it's not the thing itself. Right. The korban itself. Yeah, it is silly. Yes, it is. The shank bone, absolutely.
Wait,
absolutely. Chazal say you shouldn't do that. Having grilled, add just plain grilled meat. If you add sauce to something else, then possibly. Something else, not just stum steak. You shouldn't be having steak at your Pesach Seder. You should be having steak at your Pesach Seder. Let's put it that way. On a regular Shabbat, no problem. Okay, then we have the Tzafun, right? Which, as we mentioned, is the Afikoman. That's the last thing we do. And we mentioned already in a previous class, the whole day of stealing. We don't like to promote stealing on our kids. However, we want to keep them awake. That's all part of that thing. And the Gemara talks about it and says the Chazal used to do it. They used to hand out, snatching and taking. Some people do the parents take, some the kids take. This is all to pique the interest of the children. But the idea as well that this was hidden away. And this is the last food we're going to see. It actually represents the Korban Pesach. It comes in place of it. And therefore, just as the Korban Pesach had to be the last thing they ate on Pesach night, when they actually bring a Korban Pesach, the taste of the Korban Pesach, so too over here as well. Okay, then we have Birchat HaMazon. We do the benching. We close it off. And from that point, there's two more cups of wine. And that's it. Then there's Hallel. We do a full Hallel. Interesting enough, we don't do a full Hallel for miracles that happen outside of Eretz Yisrael. But this is before Har Sinai. So for this one, we do. Okay? And we give thanks to Eretz Baruch Hu. That's the main theme of the evening. Right? We don't have to be great Chachamim. Right? Nevonim. Just simply, we will give thanks, and then Nirtza, right, we finish, and then there's other songs which we'll speak about in future classes, which have great symbolism. They aren't just cute songs at the end, right? The Chad Gadya, Chad Miodea, these go back and have great symbolism that go with them. We'll be talking a little bit about them later on. I don't think we spent a whole class on those 15 steps, but we did, and it was worth it. We will start next class with the Seder plate and what goes on it, look at those different things, and then we'll look at various things we have to do in order to make the Seder meaningful. Okay, I've got to fly. Thank you.